We're going to be in Matthew chapter 28 today, the very last few verses of the Gospel of Matthew, the first book of the New Testament, if you want to go there. And then we're also going to jump to Acts chapter 26 for the second half of the message. So that'll be our two primary texts. We're finishing a series today called Good News. Hopefully you've been able to be a part of this series. It's been all about the gospel and the role of the gospel in our lives. And so we'll be finishing up this series today. And then we'll be launching a brand new series next Sunday on the Old Testament character Samson. And so we'll spend 5 weeks in the Old Testament story of Samson. That's in the book of Judges, chapters 14 through 16, if you want to read ahead. And then after our Samson series, we're doing a verse-by-verse walk through the book of Philippians for the rest of the year. And so again, if you want to read ahead, I know a lot of you have already been reading in the book of Philippians, and so we're looking forward to that. We're a Bible-teaching church here at City Church, and so we don't want to lose sight of that. A lot of times we walk through books verse by verse, and then sometimes we do characters, and then sometimes we do kind of theological truths like this series. But either way, we want it to come out of the text and preach the Bible, because I believe that's what's going to bring life transformation to you. And so again, I say this often, if I ever disagree with the book, you always roll with the book and not with me. So back up what I say with what comes out of the text and go with that. As Ashley mentioned, I'll echo. Thank you so much for those of you that have reached out or been praying for my parents. It's been an unusual season the last 2 weeks and trying to figure out all this. We do have some good news with Dad, and he's been making a lot of improvements, and so we are thankful for that. And so thank you for your prayers, and continue to do so, and we'll try to provide updates as necessary. I've been I almost said appointed. I think I'm self-appointed. The self-appointed kind of social media update person for my family. And really the reason I did that is because my mom's phone was just blowing up with calls and texts. And so I had a nice way to get on her Facebook and say, stop calling my mom, so she can rest. Because my mom also has COVID and then a lot of kind of underlying conditions where her life literally would be at stake with this virus. And so in a nice way, was able to kind of quell some of the calls and texts. I think it was nice. In my mind, it's always nice. It doesn't always come across nice to other people, but in my mind, I'm the nicest guy on the planet in moments like that. So I have an important announcement to make, and it's the best news that you will ever hear. As a matter of fact, this news will impact your life in every possible way. This news is so fantastic that it has the potential to transform your life and the life of those that you love. It's news that has transformed my life. I mean, it is great news, and we need good news right now. We need great news. Like when we started this series, we started talking about all the bad news and how we need good news, and I'm not sure that the kind of cultural news has gotten any better since the series started, but the good news has still remained good news. However, there's one caveat with this really good news. I'm not going to tell it to you. I'm not going to tell you the news. You know why? It's personal. It's personal news. I don't want to offend you by sharing this news with you, or you might have questions about this news that I don't have an answer for, so I'm going to keep it quiet. As a matter of fact, it's kind of socially awkward to discuss this news, so here's my plan. I am hoping that you will observe how this news has somehow impacted my life, that you'll possibly figure it out as we interact. And maybe, just maybe, you'll ask me about it at some level. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep it to myself. This good news announcement is not really an announcement. This news is less announcement and more kind of personal information that I want to internalize. Even though someone shared this good news with me, and the primary means by which this good news is spread is people who have received this news share it with other people who have not received the news. That's how it's spread. Are you following me? Are you tracking with me? Good News has been a series that's been all about the gospel. The word gospel means an announcement of good news. That at its most basic level, the gospel implies this message is good news to be announced, to be proclaimed, to be shared, to be talked about. We have said from week one, the announcement of the good news is a headline. It's not a footnote. It's not an appendix. It is a headline. There's not one notion in the biblical concept of the gospel that suggests that we are to keep it secret, confidential, private. We are not invited to be undercover followers. We are invited, with the words of Jesus, to be fishers of people, fishers of men, Jesus said to the first disciples. And so what that means is we don't fish by getting in our boats and going out onto the river. We won't even talk about right now whether you should eat what comes out of the Tennessee River or not here. Let that be a different conversation. But if you're going to be a fishing person and you get out on the Tennessee River in your boat, your philosophy is not going to be, man, this is a really slick boat. Like, I love my boat. My boat looks great. It's got this awesome motor. I have really good fishing gear. As a matter of fact, my fishing gear and my boat and everything that's accompanied, that's my knowledge of fishing, what I just gave you. Everything accompanied with my fishing supplies, is that a word? My tackle, I'm throwing out every possible fishing term I can think of right now. All this, my boat, my motor, my tackle, my rod and reel, all of this stuff is so awesome that fish are just going to jump out of the river and jump into my boat. Because what I have is awesome. And I'm just going to ride on the river and hopefully the fish will notice the awesomeness of my boat and jump in. You'd be like, Devin, you're out of your mind. That's not how you fish. You got to like throw the whatever into the water. Lure, baits. And then you're going to catch some fish that way. They're not jumping out of the river into the boat. It is a headline, an announcement. We are not, right, kind of this clandestine secret agents of Jesus. The invitation to follow Jesus is the gospel life. What we've been talking about is an all-encompassing life. It is the gospel is everything that we're about. That the gospel is the entire swimming pool. It's not just the diving board that gets us into the kingdom. We live in the gospel. The gospel is an all-encompassing part of our life as Jesus followers. We are about the gospel, gospel-driven, gospel-centered. It's not like, okay, I've got my get out of hell free card. Now I just kind of leave the gospel behind and move on to other stuff. No, we have said in this series again and again that the gospel is the house. It's not just the front door. The gospel is the pool. It's not just the diving board. And last week we broke it down relationally and we said as we bathe ourselves in the gospel every day that it impacts our everyday lives, our relationships, what we do, how we work, how we react, how we parent, how we love, and on and on and on. That the gospel impacts everything about life. And the way we want to end this series is as a reminder that this same principle applies to how we discuss our faith. As we are captured and transformed by the gospel, that it becomes natural for us to talk about the gospel, to invite others to join us on this journey of knowing and following Jesus. You get this at a certain level. If you are as infatuated with your children as we are with ours, you get this. If you are as deeply in love with your kids as we are ours, you get this. It takes that much time for me to tell you a Levi story. It takes a moment's time for me to talk about what Kaylee's doing, right, in Colorado, or Reagan going to UNA, or what Zach's doing. I don't know what Zach's doing, but whatever it is. Takes a moment's time to talk about Zach or to talk about Levi or just tell a funny story about Levi. You know why? I deeply love them. They're my life in a lot of ways on earth, right? And so because of my infatuation with them, I'm quick to talk about them. You don't have to know very long, if you know me, you don't have to talk to me very long to know that I am married to Ashley. You know why I talk about her? I love her deeply. Doesn't take long for you to know that we love each other, we talk about each other, right? That we are engrossed in each other's world in a lot of ways. And so we get this concept. The original word for gospel is the word evangelion in the Greek. And the reason I want to give you that is because it's, you can hear evangelion, where we get one of our most frightening words in the Christian faith, evangelism. Ah! Evangelism comes from that word. And I know it strikes fear into the heart of even the most, I don't know, courageous Christian keyboard warrior Facebook posting people. It's still, when it comes to the idea of having to share your faith with somebody, you can be all brave and warrior-like behind the keyboard or reposting a cool Facebook post about Jesus as a socially awkward white male or something, but the reality of talking to someone about our faith gets scary, right? It is a word that is associated with proselytizing and aggressive sales tactics and large placards and televangelists with big hair and the fear of being stumped and offensive and weird and overzealous. Like, these are the things we think of when we think of the idea of evangelism. And yet, the final instructions of Jesus before leaving earth is that we are to be good news announcers, gospel proclaimers, that we, as we say at City Church, are to continue what he began, Acts 1. What he started, we continue. So let's dive into the final words of Jesus, verse 18, right before he ascends back to the Father after the resurrection, as he speaks to his disciples, his final words, this is what Jesus says to them. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age." Like, these words are clear words, clear instructions. There's no mincing of words here from Jesus. They are very simple. They are very straightforward. Jesus says, go. And the tense in the original language here is assuming that you're going. It really could be translated in English, as you are going, make disciples. There's an assumption here that you are going. Jesus is not trying to talk us into going. He's not begging us to go. He's assuming that we are going. So there's go, make disciples. This word disciples is the idea of followers, of students, right? Of kind of mentorees, of apprentices. Like, the goal in going is to make followers, to make followers of Jesus, to make disciples. And then he says that we're going to baptize them. Part of this commission has to do with the idea of identity, that we're going to make followers of Jesus who identify with Jesus through baptism and this other group of followers, right, who are also following Jesus, that baptism identifies us with Jesus. It identifies us with other followers who are on this journey. So Jesus says, you're going, you're going to make disciples, you're going to help them identify with me and with other followers. That's what we're doing next Sunday, is what baptism is. And those who will be baptized are identifying with Jesus, the death and resurrection of Jesus. And then they are identifying with all of us other kind of messed up Jesus followers on this journey, that I'm a part of this group, right, that are Jesus followers. And so, again, if you haven't taken that step in your spiritual journey, with all the COVID and craziness going on, great time to identify with Jesus and with his church through baptism. So if you've taken that step of faith in your life, we encourage you to take that next step of baptism in your life. And so reach out to us if that's where you're at on your journey, and we'll talk to you about what that looks like next Sunday. And so you're going to go make disciples, baptize them, and then teach them. You're going to equip them. You're going to enable them. You're going to ground them in the gospel. That's what the teaching of Jesus is. Again, this idea of gospel. And so you're going to ground them. And then I love the two kind of encompassing promises that Jesus makes here. He promises his power to his followers. He says, all authority has been given to me over heaven and earth. All authority has been given to me. therefore, I've told you anytime we see that word in the text, we know that it is there for a reason. And so he says, go therefore. The therefore is pointing back to the authority. Jesus says, I have all power, so go. I'm assuming you're going because Jesus says, all authority has been given to me, and you're my followers. And so my power is going with you. And so go in my power. Why is this important? Well, think about it. Jesus is getting ready to leave. He's leaving. And so he reminds his followers of his authority, of his power. They've already witnessed the power of Jesus firsthand as they've lived life with him, but now he's leaving, and they will be tempted to feel abandoned. They will be tempted to feel powerless. But Jesus says, I'm not leaving you powerless. We go in his power. Now, this is so important. We are the means. We are the ones that continue what Jesus started. Again, there's no plan B here. The church is the plan A and only plan. We are the means, but he is the power. So I'm just going to make this statement and move past it. If we rely on us, if we rely on what we can produce, if we rely on our programs, our methods, the coolness of our church or the coolness of our music, whatever it may be, if we rely on us, our abilities, we get what we can produce. You get that? If we rely on us, we get what we can produce. But if we rely on God and the power of the Holy Spirit, we get what he produces. Big difference, okay? And so Jesus says, I promise my power, and then the other promise here is of his presence. He says on the backside of this that I'm going with you. He is with us, that we do not embark on this mission alone, that he goes with us. You know what this does in our walk with Jesus and sharing, when it comes to sharing our faith? It takes the pressure and the burden off of us, that he is with us. It is not my role to talk a person into following Jesus. It's not my responsibility to convince you to be a follower of Jesus. You know what my responsibility is? Go and announce. Announce the gospel. Share the gospel. It's my responsibility to go and leave the results up to him. I learned really early in ministry that this is more about me not having to wear the weight of people's response to the gospel. You guys know, like, my tactic is I'm going to open up the Bible and yell at you, right? This is like gospel preaching. And so that's the weight of what I wear is, am I going to preach the text? And even the shift for me is, like, ultimately I want to preach from this, so I'm not wearing the weight of somehow crafting something that's going to cause you to do the right thing in your life. Like, I just want to preach the gospel, and it comes same thing with sharing our faith. We're announcers, right? And we announce, and God does his work, and it's through the presence and the power of God that the gospel is proclaimed and takes root and gives fruit, and it takes the weight off of us. If you have someone in your life that is not a follower of Jesus and you are praying and sharing the gospel with them, like, allow God to wear the weight of the role, right? You be the announcer, and then rest in God. Rest in his promises. Ultimately, salvation itself is a work of God. That salvation itself comes in the enabling power of God. We are not responsible for the comments section, if we're putting it in modern terms. We're responsible for making the announcement. You ever read the comments section on stuff? Right? So whatever search engine you use or whatever puts the news in front of you, if it's, I don't know, Yahoo or Fox or CNN or whatever you're kind of looking at. If you read an article, there's like the article, there's the announcement, and then there's the comments, which is where the entertainment happens. But I'm not responsible for the comments when it comes to announcing the good news. You're going to see all kinds of comments when it comes to announcing. But the weight for us is writing of the article. It's the announcement of the good news. Now, let me kind of turn this into a practical way, a biblical example of what this looks like. So let me talk to you about what I believe is the simplest, most natural, and biblical way to approach sharing the good news with others. And it's very simple. It's just the idea of learning to be able to tell my story, of telling my Jesus story, telling my story. Here's what I know. No one knows you like you. you are an expert on you. As a matter of fact, some of you are too much of an expert on you, because you want us to know all about you too. Not the band, but you know what I'm saying. You also. You too. Not YouTube, you too. We're experts on ourselves. So why is sharing my story so important? Here's some just really basic stuff to give you. One, it's a personal story. It's what God's done in your life. You don't have to memorize a formula. You don't have to know how to walk down the Romans road if you grew up in the type churches I did. Like, you just know how to share what Jesus is doing. You don't have to worry about telling it correctly. It's just your personal story. It's also conversational. You're not preaching a sermon. You can do it over coffee. You can do it while playing golf, unless you play like I do, and then you're not in the mindset to be talking about the gospel except for praying to Jesus that you'll get better. But you can do it in a conversational way. Here's what else I know about your story. It is undisputable. It is what you've experienced. It's your reality. You're not making stuff up. I've heard people that made stuff up when they're telling their story. At least in my mind, they had to make it up because it didn't seem realistic. I'll never forget taking a speech class in college, and we had to share like a personal story. And there's this dude that was kind of known in the class of, like, if he wasn't stretching the truth, it was like, I don't know, close to bending. But he was known as that guy. You're like walking away, he's like, there's no possible way that happened to that guy. But he was telling his personal story, and he told like this moment in his life where he made life transformation involve one of his friends getting in a wreck, which is a believable part of the story, that he was kind of following his friend. He watches his friend get in this wreck, and his friend died in the accident. Again, as his friend dies in the accident, and this is the part of the story that seemed unbelievable. He's walking up on the scene, and there's his friend. And again, I'm just repeating the story, okay? His friend died in supposedly a horrific way, and he's kind of all of his, and now the story's coming to my mind, I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't be telling this, but basically his friend's brains are laying on the street there, right? And so riding motorcycle, no helmet kind of thing. And so here's the part of the story that seems unbelievable, that he says that he picked up part of his friend's brain and put it in his pocket as a reminder of what just happened. And like he told this in class, I'm looking around like, did anybody else just hear this? This didn't happen. The dude didn't pick up brains and put it in his pocket. Like, fail him and get him away from the stand. You failed speech class right now. So your personal story hopefully is realistic, undisputable, unless you're telling brains in the pocket stories. Also, I know about your personal story is that it's interesting. People listen to stories. Here's what I know. You will forget a sermon I tell, like preach like this, but you'll remember stories I tell about my kids or Levi for a long time. Because we remember stories. A lot of the Bible is a redemptive story. It is God's redemptive story. And so it's interesting. And then most important, it's biblical. Jesus told stories. Paul told his story over and over again. The Bible itself is the redemptive story of God. So let's look at this biblical example of what we're talking about in Acts chapter 26. Let me just read it. Stay with me as I read through it, because I want you to hear Paul's way that he shared his story. And then I'll come back and kind of tell you the context of what was going on and point out a few things here before we go. Matthew 26, verse 4, this is Paul speaking before Herod Agrippa. My manner of life from my youth, spent from the beginning among my own nation and in Jerusalem, is known by all the Jews. They have known for a long time, if they are willing to testify, that according to the strictest party of our religion, I have lived as a Pharisee. And now I stand here on trial because of my hope in the promise made by God to our fathers, to which our 12 tribes hope to obtain as they earnestly worship night and day. And for this hope, I am accused by the Jews, O king. Why is it thought incredible by any of you that God raises the dead? I myself was convinced that I ought to do many things in opposing the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And I did so in Jerusalem. I not only locked up many of the saints in prison after receiving authority from the chief priest, but when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them.
and I punished them often in the synagogues and tried to make them blaspheme. And in raging fury against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities, right? And so we kind of hear what was going on in Paul's life pre-Jesus. Verse 12. In this connection, I journeyed to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priest. At midday, O king, I saw on the way a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, that shone around me and those who journeyed with me. And we had all fallen to the ground. I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. And I said, Who are you, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. But rise and stand upon your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to appoint you as a servant and witness to the things in which you have seen me and to those in which I will appear to you, delivering you from your people and from the Gentiles to whom I'm sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins, a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. Therefore, O King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the heavenly vision, but declared first to those in Damascus, then in Jerusalem, throughout all the region of Judea, also to the Gentiles, that they should repent and turn to God, performing deeds in keeping with their repentance. For this reason, the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me. To this day, I have had the help that comes from God, and so I stand here testifying both to small and great, saying nothing but what the prophets and Moses said would come to pass, that the Christ must suffer, and that by being the first to rise from the dead, he would proclaim light both to our people and to the Gentiles. And as he was saying these things in his defense, Festus said with a loud voice, Paul, you're out of your mind. Your great learning is driving you out of your mind. But Paul said, I'm not out of my mind, most excellent Festus, but I am speaking true and rational words. For the king knows about these things, and to him I speak boldly. For I am persuaded that none of these things has escaped his notice. For this has been done. This has not been done in a corner. King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know that you believe. And Agrippa said to Paul, in a short time, would you persuade me to be a Christian? And Paul said, whether short or long, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains. And so here we have Paul's story of his conversion before King Agrippa. So let me kind of give you the context here. Paul has been in prison over kind of these trumped up charges against him. And as a Roman citizen, he appeals to the Roman authorities for a fair trial. And so he stands before, previous to this, two different governors, Felix, who we see in this story, and a guy named Festus. And so he stood both before these governors, and to both of these governors, he said, I want to speak to the highest Roman authority to whom I can speak to kind of plead my case. And so after he's left in jail for 2 years, he finally stands before Herod Agrippa, and that is the story that we read here, the testimony that we read here. Now, let me tell you about Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa was the great, his great-grandfather was the Herod that the Magi appeared before when they came to find the baby Jesus. And so his great-granddaddy was the guy that said to the Magi, go find him, tell me where he is so I can worship him. The angel says to the wise men, like, don't go back. He's got a different motive. And so what was his response to that? Well, since I don't know where Jesus is, kill every child that is 2 years, every male child 2 years and younger. And so that was his great-grandfather. His grandfather, here's his kind of saga, stole his brother's wife. And after his stepdaughter basically performed a striptease in front of him, he had John the Baptist beheaded. That's his grandfather, okay? His father persecuted the early church and had James, one of the early church founders and brother Jesus, killed, murdered. That's his heritage. That's Herod Agrippa. And so Paul is dragged before him, and Paul has one shot. So what does he do? PowerPoint presentation. Pass out a handout for them to follow along, get into a theological debate, teach a theology lesson. No, Paul has one shot, and what he does is he tells his story. This is who I was before Jesus. This is who I am after Jesus.
We get kind of the before and after, right? We see it a lot. We see like, hey, this is what I looked like before my makeover. This is what I look like now. This is what I look like before I lost 1,000 pounds. This is what I look like now. By the way, you always notice in the before and after makeover pictures that nobody's wearing cool clothes in the before picture. It's always like the worst clothes, worst look possible. And then after, it's like, anyways, so before and after. And so here's Paul's approach. My life before Jesus, we read all of that. I won't have to go back through all the text again, but my life before Jesus, I was a persecutor. I was the one that kind of signed off on the killing of Jesus' followers. Paul describes his pre-Jesus life. He also says, I was a Pharisee. I was trusting in the wrong things. And so it's his pre-Jesus life, his BC life, before Christ life. As you're learning to tell your story, you identify your pre-Jesus life. That is different for every person. But your life looked different before Jesus. So you have to think in those terms. What was my life like before Jesus? My lifestyle, my family, how I treated my family, what were my beliefs about God, about Christ, what was my kind of life purpose, my search for significance? Like, those are the areas you have to think through. My life pre-Jesus, and you know what that looks like. You just have to learn to begin to process, what did my life look like before Jesus? And then the next transition in Paul's telling of his story was his kind of defining moment, his knock off the horse on the road to Damascus moment. That was his Jesus encounter moment, his Jesus moment when everything changed for him. You may or may not have a get knocked off your horse Damascus road experience like Paul did, but you have some spiritual milestone in your life where you transitioned from, I'm not sure about all this, till I'm still not sure I got it all figured out, but you have a Jesus moment in your life. Looks so different for every person. For some of you, it's an instantaneous Jesus moment. I was this, and now I'm this. If you know anything about my family heritage, that was the story of my grandfather. I was this. I was a raging alcoholic that was abusive and a vile person. And then after my Jesus moment, everything changed about my life. Some of you are more process people. This is what my life has looked like over time, the difference that Jesus has made. You might not even have a moment, like you may not have a June 12th, 9 a.m. in Sunday school moment in your life. You just know that you were this and now you're this and Jesus has transformed your life. But you need to think about those spiritual milestones that made that difference in your life. And so again, some of you are kind of came out of the worlds that I came out of, or it's like I walked an aisle, right? I prayed a prayer or something that kind of defined that moment for you. Others didn't kind of come out of those circles and so it may look a little different for you. But being able to identify what was the moment where I crossed over the line of faith? Was it a process? What was the spiritual faith moment, the spiritual milestone? Was it baptized? Or what was my conversion story? Was it a conversation that someone had with me? But being able to think through my life before Jesus, the spiritual kind of milestone conversion moment in my life, and then Paul transitioned to his life after Jesus. After Damascus Road, Paul says, my life's not the same. It's been spiritually transformed. This is what God had for me. This was my calling. For us, that is, part of our story is like, what difference has Jesus made in my life? What difference is Jesus making in my life? This is my post-conversion, my current Jesus life. This is the difference Jesus is making in my life. He's making a difference in my attitude, making a difference in my worldview. He makes a difference in my life with other people, my relationships. My addictions look different because of Jesus. My marriage looks different because of Jesus. Life after life with Jesus. Learning to tell your story. Before Jesus, Jesus encounter, after Jesus. You are the experts on your life, on your story, on your Jesus story. You see, here's what I've learned kind of in my journey when it comes to like sharing your faith. You know what matters most to people in this conversation? What difference has Jesus made in your life? What difference has Jesus made in your life? What difference has grace made in your life? What difference is grace making in your life? life.
And we get this, right? Somebody comes and tells you about the latest and greatest fad diet, right? Here's what I've been doing. I've been not eating all these things. I have been eating these few things. Man, it's made a difference. What question are you going to ask? Well, how much weight have you lost? Well, I haven't lost a single pound. Matter of fact, I've put on 20, but this diet is amazing. Like, well, why am I going to not eat all that and eat this? You're gaining weight. What I want to know is, if I'm going to starve myself out of all those things and eat things that are colored green, like, am I going to actually lose weight? Right? Those are the things that you're concerned about. What difference is Jesus making in your life? And that comes most often in the form of our story. Here's what I believe our goal should be when it comes to gospel people sharing gospel. Our goal is to tell people our story as simple as possible. Here's the difference Jesus is making in my life. Like, everyone can share their story. Regardless of how sexy your story is, like, I was this without Jesus and now I'm all this with Jesus. Regardless of all that, you can learn to share your story. So let me just end this whole series by giving us just a few practical helps when it comes to learning to share our story. Because here's what you do not want to happen. You do not want good news to go bad. Like, you don't want to share your story and a person be like, man, I'm recommitting myself to paganism based on what you just told me. Like, that's not the goal here. The goal is to really tell the story of Jesus in a way that helps put the spotlight on Jesus. And so what we do is a few simple helps here. One, avoid like weird stories. Avoid like brains in the pocket stories. Like, you don't want to go into telling your gospel Jesus story by talking about an angel that was standing by your bed holding a lamb when you had a Jesus encounter, because that does nothing to put the spotlight on Jesus. So, like, just avoid weirdness. Avoid long-windedness. You don't want the person you're talking to's clothes to have gone out of style by the time you finish telling your story. I know who's telling you that. Like, I know, like, most Sundays, your clothes are borderline going out of style by the time I'm done. I get it. So how does that happen? How do I avoid long-windedness? Like, learn to write down your story. I would say write it down in 100 words or less. How can you effectively communicate your story? And what, if you've ever been part of sales world at times in my career, how can I tell this while riding in an elevator, right? How can I, from floor 8 to ground floor, give you in a window of time the gospel? And so learning to be able to tell your story quickly, less words, keeping it short and simple to make a gospel impact. Here's another help, like, avoid being confusing. What's worse than being long is being incoherent. Like, you don't want to share your story and then the person say, like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And so just learn to be clear. So avoid, like, again, supernatural experiences, like I had a dead relative talking to me when I came to Jesus, or I was floating above my body. Like, avoid that kind of stuff when it comes to learning to share the gospel. Avoid confusing. So develop one simple plot line. Before Jesus, after Jesus. Before Jesus, I was self-destructive. I was fear-stricken. I was in despair. I was addicted. I was lonely. My life was pointless. After Jesus, I am a healthy person that's seeking to be, right, a healthy spouse and a healthy parent. I am confident in who Jesus has created me to be. I am hopeful that even when things do not make sense, that God is in control. I am liberated from what was holding me captive. I am accepted by God. I am a purposeful person in my life. Like, these are the nuggets of what my life was like before Jesus and after Jesus that we have to learn to be able to tell our story effectively. And then if you are here for our Christian Word series, avoid kind of Christian code talk, kind of religionese. Like, if you're trying to share your Jesus story, like, you don't approach it with, like, I was washed in the blood of the Lamb, justified, sanctified, and glorified by Jesus. Like, that's going to be the, like, I have no idea what you're talking about moment. And so we learn again, is what I'm saying, is it insider jargon, or is it clear and understandable so that people understand the gospel? And then here is an important one. We learn to avoid pride. Pride. Because if you get the gospel,
You're not going to be prideful, pious, judgmental, self-righteous when sharing the gospel. We're not going to come across with a "I am this and you are not" mindset, approach, attitude. Instead, the gospel makes us humble. It makes us grace-filled. It helps the person that we're talking to and discussing understand that we're still on this journey, right? We're followers. We don't have it all figured out. If you remember in our belief project through the Gospel of John, I loved in John chapter 9, the blind guy, and Jesus heals him and he can see, and they drag him before the religious authorities like, is this the guy that was blind and all those things? And then they try to drill the blind guy with theology, like, tell us how all this happened. And remember the blind guy's response? He's like, I have no clue what you're talking about. Here's what I know. I was blind, and now I can see. That's what I know. That was his Jesus story, right? I was a blind guy begging. I had a Jesus encounter, and now I can see. Like, that's kind of the simplicity of the gospel. I was this, and now I am this because of Jesus. The good news of Jesus Christ is the greatest message in human history. Did you hear me? The good news of the gospel of Jesus is the greatest message in human history. As a matter of fact, we believe it is the difference in heaven and hell. Do I really believe that? Do I truly believe it? If so, am I sharing my story? I really believe the people in my social circle, in my family circle, that the gospel is the difference in heaven and hell. Do I really believe that? Am I sharing my story? Did you see the responses that Paul got when he was sharing his story? One of the governors was like, dude, you're out of your mind. You have lost your mind. Herod Agrippa, according to what your translation says, some translations say, Paul, you've almost persuaded me to become a follower. Other translations say, do you think in this short amount of time you can convince me to be a follower too? But what I know is he received responses of skepticism. He received responses of, that's something to think about. And many times he received responses of, I want to follow Jesus too. Many believed from Paul sharing his story. That's how the church propelled forward in the first century. Followers sharing their story. As one guy phrases it, beggars telling other beggars where to find the bread. Sharing our story. So, putting this in the context of our whole series, why do we fail to share the greatest news of human history? Maybe it's because we've not been captured by it. We've not been captured by the gospel. We've been captured by something. We've been captivated by someone. If you listen to conversations, you know all around us and us, we are captured by things, aren't we? We're captivated by them. We're captivated by sports. We're captured by whether there's going to be college football this fall. We're captivated by the news. We're captured by what's going on in COVID world. We're captivated by arguments on this side and this side about masks and distancing. We're captured by politics. We are captivated by our kids and our family and our friends. We are captured and captivated by a lot of things, but have we been captured by the gospel? Are we captivated by Jesus? If not, maybe, as we've discussed in this series, maybe it's because we have not really grasped how terribly bad the bad news is and how wonderfully marvelous the good news is. Maybe we've lost sight
of how bad the bad news is of my life outside of Jesus. Maybe we have failed to really recognize just how sinful we are outside of Jesus. And maybe we fail to be captured by just how amazing grace is. That it's not just words we throw in a song to sing. That grace really is that amazing. And it really is that wonderful. It really is that marvelous that Jesus would pick us up and rescue us. Because here's what I know. If we really grasp the gospel itself, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. You know why? It's our heartbeat. It's what's on our hearts and our minds because we are captivated by Jesus, that He is our true treasure. So, the last 2 weeks, as my parents have struggled with COVID, how realistic is it that if I somehow were given some type of privy information about the cure or the solution for COVID, how realistic for me to be, man, that's awesome, that's great and glorious news, but it's kind of socially awkward to talk about it. Maybe someone will pick up on my attitude that I know something about COVID they don't know, and they'll ask me about it. And then I'll tell them about it. Maybe they'll understand by how I'm living life just how awesome this cure is, and they'll ask me about it. Maybe I shouldn't share it, though, because I don't have all the answers. I don't know all the science of how it cures. So maybe I'll just keep it to myself. You would look at me and think, Devin, you are insane. That's not how you would react and not what you would do. And if you did that, it would be very wrong for you to keep that to yourself. What I am saying to you as a follower of Jesus is that we have the greatest news in all of human history. How foolish and selfish of us is it to keep the story to ourselves? When Jesus was leaving, He said to His followers, here's the plan. You're going to go. You're going to make disciples. You're going to baptize them. And you're going to teach them. What if you had been in that group that day? Jesus, there's got to be more to it than this. Like, you see this group? Like, you know who you're talking to here? Like, this guy over here just denied you like 2 months ago. Jesus, are you sure that's the plan? Like, wouldn't it be easier for God to, like, put it in the clouds, right? Speak it verbally. He can do that. There's one plan. There's no plan B. Followers sharing their story. Those followers making other followers who become followers and share their story. It is how the message has passed from generation to generation to generation, and how it passes in 2020. Allow our hearts to be captured by the gospel, and we'll become gospel proclaimers of a God who is really good and really gracious and who has transformed my life.